all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
Broadcast news, if you haven't seen that movie yet. Welcome to the second hour of Up North News Radio for Friday, January 27th. Carolyn Fiddler, Curry Newsroom Political Editorial Director, is with us, who reminds me somewhat of that Holly Hunter character from Broadcast News. You'd have made quite the Broadcast News producer.
Thank you.
Well, don't put in the neurotic stuff. We all have neuroses. You know, that just made the movie more entertaining.
It's true.
All right. We've got Carolyn with us for a few minutes. And then later in the hour, Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, will help us look at this week's events and media coverage of them, including Kevin McCarthy borrows from Joe McCarthy as House Republicans create new committees to investigate the investigators and undercut the people in law enforcement who are trying to help the country hold on to its democracy. Later, I'll look ahead to weekend sports with Dan Schumacher. Then on Monday, the premiere of Motherhood Mondays with Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin. They started the group Mothers for Mandela. They've now transitioned that into Motherhood for Good, staying involved and helping moms and everyone who doesn't follow politics regularly have a better understanding of what's going on. If you'd like to reach us, 844-967-2789 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. I didn't have much to say in the commercial break. It was rather depressing for me listening to Carolyn and Aaron talk about their favorite operas. None of them involved Bugs Bunny, and therefore I could not be part of them because it's the only operas I've ever actually seen. But you two, you have quite the experience. I don't even know where that began, but I know it started with you guys talking about Mozart. One of you really doesn't like Mozart. Apparently one of you does, but then you bonded over operas. So that's,
I was lucky that my high school had a program with the Met Opera, so that, we would get to see the live streamed operas every couple of months, I believe. So during high school, I probably saw like a dozen operas.
That is very cool.
Yeah,
I didn't see my first one until I was 36.
But look how you both, you know, now you appreciate them far more than I do when I just hear the Warner Brothers theme, you know, come up. But that does take us to what Carolyn is working on with her State House Action newsletter. As you follow political activity in all of the states, you have to follow all of them. I just see bits and pieces from time to time, especially this week in the Iowa legislature, where there was a huge debate about voucher schools, where the voucher school proponents, led by a Republican governor, got their way. We've seen this fight in Missouri. We see this fight occasionally in Wisconsin. And Carolyn, it sounds like your newsletter is going to say the voucher folks continue to be on the march, that, you know, it's a two-part strategy. One, weaken public schools, and then two, replace them. And that is still very much the playbook, it appears.
That's completely correct. There was a lobbyist in Iowa who was caught on tape saying the quiet part loud. There's a recording of this woman saying, "I want to destroy public schools."
All right.
Which is the ultimate goal of these voucher programs, because public schools are places where these right wingers can't really like dictate what's taught.
They can't indoctrinate.
Even though they're trying with these school board takeovers and whatnot, and they have to let everyone in, and that is galling to a lot of these folks. They want private schools to
exclusivity.
Private schools can just exclude anyone they want.
Right, and that's where, you know, folks have wanted to go, the public school opponents. But they have really gained ground, in part because there is this right-wing media bubble that can spread misinformation and refer to it as wokeness, which is, again, just shorthand for, you know, don't be a jerk, don't be a racist, don't be a bigot, you know. Mind your own business, respect science, you know, teach an accurate assessment of history. And if you call it woke and you spend enough money, and that's the thing, there's a lot of money behind these campaigns, and it has really played a role in Wisconsin. It has diverted so many millions of dollars away, tax dollars that have gone to private religious schools and private, you know, people with a profit motive behind them for voucher schools at the expense of local neighborhood schools. And like I said, in Iowa, whatever was in the bill that favored voucher schools, it was a late night debate. Our folks at Iowa Starting Line covered it, and ultimately that bill passed.
It sure did. And not even with unanimous Republican support. There were Republicans who joined Democrats, all Democrats, in voting against it. And these folks were from rural areas, which, you know, is an overlooked part of this debate, I think. Like, people who live in urban areas, suburbia, have plenty of private school alternatives that aren't like that far away geographically. But if you live in the middle of nowhere, like where I grew up,
yeah,
you a lot of times don't have access to private schools, or like maybe just one that's already full or something. So these rural Republican lawmakers voted against it because it was just taking money away from these rural schools that struggle anyway and giving it to these private schools that aren't accountable to state curriculum standards. They don't have to worry about licensing teachers, that there's no transparency in terms of how that money is spent, or like meetings, governance of these schools. There are none of the requirements that surround public education, which are incredibly important.
And I don't know if you agree or not, but I think that the messaging against this movement focused a lot on the private schools and the lack of accountability. And it clearly hasn't been working successfully, that maybe what progressives and others need to do is talk about the shift of money, that this is money that's literally being taken from you and your neighborhood school to go elsewhere. So maybe it needs to be more fiscal. All right. How can people get the State House Action newsletter?
They can go to statehouseaction.substack.com. It's free. Don't worry. I'm not charging people for my newsletter, and sign up there.
All right, Carolyn. Thank you so much.
I really want, but I don't recommend it.
Have a great weekend. We'll see you next Friday.
Thank you.
All right. Back with more after this. You're up north. Friday morning. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and we are going to talk next about what does it mean to do an investigation the right way versus the very, very, very wrong way, a very bad way to do investigations. And you know, we have seen very clear examples of both in our history. And unfortunately, we are really in the throes of seeing examples of how investigations can be not so much investigations, but can be politicized. One could even say weaponized. And I say that because so much of what the right wing does is projection, where they accuse people of doing something and then end up doing it themselves. Great example in the last segment, talking about indoctrination, that's something that folks on the right wing say that public schools are doing when what is indoctrination is teaching people to hate, teaching, dividing people, you know, against themselves, you know, having racial resentments and things like that. And now we have what's called a Committee on the Weaponization of Government, something that was created by the new House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy. And it's one of three different committees that are going to be investigating things, and primarily going to be investigating the investigators, the people who investigated the attempts to undermine the 2020 election, the attempts to fight a pandemic in the early days before it ended up killing a million people, and how many of them died because of the misinformation that was out there undermining the original public health investigations. And now we've learned that another Republican investigation of the investigators really went nowhere. This was, remember the Mueller investigation into Russia's attempt to help the Trump campaign in 2016. Well, once that was all said and done, and I mean immediately after it was all done, Trump's Attorney General, William Barr, who again, deliberately downplayed the significance of what was found in the Mueller report that showed Russian attempts to help Trump in 2016 and the Trump campaign's awareness of this, if not outright collusion. In the aftermath of downplaying that, Barr turned around, again carrying water for the president, which you shouldn't do if you're an independent attorney general, and launched an investigation of the investigators and appointed somebody by the name of John Durham. And the Durham investigation didn't get nearly the attention, but in part because it found so very little. And a new report in the New York Times talks about how that Durham investigation unraveled to the point where, for a time, it veered into a criminal investigation related to Donald Trump himself. It led to, you know, one attempt at a prosecution where it was found, where the person was found not guilty. There was a dissension throughout because of the departure of people who believed that the Durham investigation was politically motivated. In fact, at one point in the article, people talk about how both William Barr and John Durham had been quite respected, and yet at some point everybody wondered, you know, where did they drink the Kool-Aid that they would do so much to put the independence and the credibility of the Department of Justice at risk? And now we have this new Congress, House of Representatives, led by Republicans, who is going to take this one step further and, again, say that they are the ones who are the victims here, and so they need to investigate the people who investigated them. It's going to serve as a distraction from the real issues, and it's going to waste millions of dollars. And there is a parallel right here in Wisconsin. The similarities between the Durham investigation and the Gableman investigation are striking. Again, in both cases, you have millions of dollars wasted. And I know the official figure is that the Gableman investigation cost about $1 million. But when you look at other ancillary distractions, time that was taken away, resources, what have you, I certainly think it's fair to say millions of dollars were wasted in the Gableman investigation. He was appointed by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, despite zero evidence of anything improper about the 2020 presidential election. So the Gableman investigation, like the Durham investigation, came from a false premise, and they were designed to distract from, you know, the actual facts of the matter. Both investigations were used to hound and intimidate people who otherwise were serving their country and basing their work on facts. And in both cases, the investigations just kind of quietly went away. Those of us who follow political news very regularly, of course, are well aware of it. But you talk to most people, and because neither the Gableman investigation nor the Durham investigation actually found anything, folks haven't heard about it. And so now we turn to the House Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, which is essentially a rebirth of the House Un-American Activities Committee that Joseph McCarthy led all those decades ago. Again, that is the actual weaponization, is when you abuse your subpoena power to hound and intimidate and attempt to prosecute people because you don't like their position or because you don't like that they were getting close to any wrongdoing that you might be doing. We've talked at length about the other committee that was formed, a special committee on China, which is going to be headed up by Green Bay Republican Mike Gallagher. And again, how there could be a bipartisan approach to China, but it's going to have to be a case of prove me wrong that this committee is going to do nothing but undermine Bush administration attempts to have relationships with China improve. And there's going to be a committee investigating the early days of the COVID pandemic, which again is simply going to reinforce the misinformation that has killed so many more people. We have seen examples of investigations that led to justice and a proper outcome, such as Watergate, and to a degree, Iran-Contra. We've seen recent investigations that were rooted in facts, but were not ultimately successful. Specifically, the first Donald Trump impeachment over his attempt to essentially blackmail Ukraine and withhold military help that would have helped stave off a Russian invasion. And the Republicans in Congress knew all this, but unlike the Republicans in Congress during Watergate, the Republicans during Trump's first impeachment did not have the honor or the patriotism to judge this case based on its facts and threat to national security, but instead the threat to their party. These are folks who said this year, during the campaign, they said this year they were going to be all about inflation and all sorts of other domestic issues. But it's quite clear that Kevin McCarthy is going to borrow a page from Joe McCarthy and dedicate this session of Congress to investigating the investigators, causing distractions and costing us a lot of money. Dick in Madison has some views on that. Dick, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Love your show. The Durham thing, you know, I've said this from the beginning with William Barr. He was basically Trump's personal attorney. He wasn't the attorney general. And that said, he does know the law because he showed how well he knows how to break it. And this particular report, I think, could be totally debunked with one thing, something that he got his mitts on, the Mueller report. If you could be anybody else in this world besides him that could actually read the whole thing, I bought it, the redacted version. I mean, it's nothing, but it's all kinds of stuff if you could actually read it. And you wouldn't even have opened this Durham report had people been able to read the Mueller report, in my opinion.
I appreciate that, Dick. Thank you very much for the call. What William Barr did, again, with the Mueller report is striking. But one of the things, when you say it, that the Mueller report kind of went all over the place, it reminds me of this point. Donald Trump had once said, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. And here's why. He understands, like other people do in certain situations, most of them related to organized crime, you don't say out loud, I'm going to rob a bank. I'm going to shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. I'm going to blackmail Ukraine. I'm going to accept help from an adversarial foreign government in my campaign for president. You don't say those things out loud, and yet when they happen, you then think that you have plausible deniability. And so because the Mueller report came right up to the line but did not say the equivalent of, I'm going to rob this bank, it was fairly easy for William Barr to say, there's nothing here. This Mueller report completely exonerates Donald Trump, or however he put it, and of course, it doesn't do that. It does, in fact, show the numerous efforts by the Russian government and other Russian players to assist Donald Trump. They wanted him to win. It does show that plenty of members of the Trump campaign were aware of and open to that kind of assistance. But rather than facilitate the cause of justice, Barr not only glossed over the Mueller report's conclusions, but then, at Trump's insistence, began to investigate the investigators. That was the Durham investigation, which, again, like the Gableman investigation here, was based on nothing, found nothing, wasted a lot of time and money, and made a lot of people's lives miserable in the process. It reminds me that apparently yesterday, and I don't have it word for word in front of me, but the former president on his tiny social media network put up a couple of things about Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And in it, basically said, I could solve this war in no time. I could bring peace in no time. This is the same guy who said, I have a big, beautiful infrastructure plan. I have a big, beautiful healthcare plan. He claims to be able to do all these things, but he said in 2016 he was going to, help Wall Street work for the middle class, and he never did that either. And the fact of the matter is, we know what Donald Trump's idea would be to quickly end the war in Ukraine, and it would be to knuckle under to Putin and the Russian government and just let them take it, which the similarities to 1938 are just depressing in a way. But you do that, and then what's next? I mean, if you're in Latvia, if you're in Finland, what do you think of that, allowing that to happen? This is a time like no other to stand strong against this type of aggression. And yet we have a growing chorus of extremists who are working to undermine Ukraine and its struggle to be free. In fact, there's been a scandal in Ukraine just this week, which just reminds us that even in times of war, there are some people who will behave badly. But other people want to use that as an excuse to throw the baby out with the bathwater and stop supporting Ukraine, when it's never been more critical to stand strong and to not listen to a former president who makes big promises that are rooted in very bad things and supports very bad types of investigations. Mark Jacob joins us in just a bit. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Since we did a little from Wide Open Spaces on the Chicks earlier, thought we'd play one more here as we welcome in Mark Jacob, whose social media bio describes him best, ex-editor at Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times, now allowed to have opinions, co-author of 8 books on history and photography, Intolerant of Racism and Small-Mindedness. Pretty much says it all. Mark, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Well, let's just pick up where I left off before the last break about Republicans running the House of Representatives, forming a committee to investigate the weaponization of the federal government. And between that and the Durham investigation, it sure doesn't seem like we're going to get a lot of focus on inflation the way Republican candidates said they were going to do during the campaign. I heard a lot about inflation. I didn't hear anything about investigating the investigators.
No, it's all about that, you know, and they're, you know, trying to set up. The real question to me is whether they're actually going to go to try to impeach Biden, which they know would never work, you know. And really, when you think about it, this whole two years of a Republican run House is going to be just kind of an act, because nothing they do is going to get passed in the Senate. Or signed by the president. I mean, it's to them, it's free reign to do all kinds of crazy crap that, you know, and that they can. But as far as, it's just amazing that they're setting up a committee to examine the weaponization of the, you know, of the federal government, considering that every new revelation shows how much the Trump administration was weaponizing the government.
Oh, yeah.
And Trump even said that. I mean, because Trump doesn't really understand how democracy is supposed to work, he just, you know, would say it out loud, just like a mob boss would, you know, say that the attorney general needed to be his lawyer, which is completely false. And, you know, and that's why he got rid of, you know, that dumb guy down in Alabama and picked up Barr. And Barr was perfectly willing to do that, because Barr is a terrible person, because Barr is a dishonest person. And I'm worried that people are fooled by dishonest people, just flat out liars who speak in erudite manner and are educated and just look very thoughtful as they're just lying their ass off to you. And I think it fools some people, but Barr is just a terrible human being and a discredit to our country.
I think as well that part of the reason that, you know, the House Republicans know that nothing substantive is going to, you know, that they could pass would pass the Senate and get the president's signature. So this debt ceiling debate is really about the only thing of some kind of legislative substance that'll get done. There won't be any bills passed. And so this is the one measure. And once this is behind us, it's going to be nothing but those sham investigation committees. And so you have, you know, just a portion of the House Republicans who are perfectly fine with allowing this to continue being a crisis, because while it's not real leverage, because it could tank the economy, it's really it's their only chance at leverage for the next 2 years.
Well, is the debt ceiling. And I'm worried that people aren't casting that in the right way. Because the Republicans want to act like, well, we're going to stop spending, which, of course, they didn't. You know, more than a quarter of the federal debt was acquired in the Trump years, 4 years. And so, you know, so they were like this blank check for Trump because they, you know, just wanted to spend and not tax, especially not tax rich people. So all this spending occurs. Suddenly the Republicans want to act like it's this is a big problem. Well, address the problem when it's budget time, not when it's pay for what you've already spent time. What people need to understand, this is not budget time. This is, you already spent the money, now you got to pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, then you're welching on your debt. You're a cheater. You're a liar. You're dishonest. You're not reliable. You don't pay your bills, which is kind of defines Donald Trump.
When you put it that way,
it's kind of a perfect description.
And so, as we frequently do here in pointing out, you know, how the media is covering these things, I know the thing that gets to you as much as it does to me is when the framing is that, again, the both sidesism that Biden is refusing to talk to Republicans. There was one New York Times article that concluded with, you know, so far only Kevin McCarthy is at the table. And, you know, again, this is not a both sides thing. There's nothing for Biden to bargain, and he has no reason to.
This is like, you know, you remember the old National Lampoon cover that said, had a dog and a gun and said, buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog. And I mean, that's what this is. It's just, this is just kind of economic terrorism that they're pulling in. And the best thing that the Biden administration can do is simply refuse to negotiate. Because it's really negotiating with economic terrorists. It's negotiating in which all you can do is lose. You can't win. And what do they want? What do the Republicans want? The thing about it, Pat, is Republicans aren't even saying specifically what they want because they're afraid to say it, because what they really want, and they said it a little bit during the campaign last time, was they want to cut into Medicare and Social Security.
And or put in a 30% national sales tax.
Right. Well, they talked about that, too, and they're floating it. Again, nobody's like putting their name to it or anything that I can see. It seems like it's coming out, but that's a total loser. I mean, that's the worst. That's maybe the worst idea I've ever heard, you know, because what all that, that's, well, let's put the burden on poor people. Mm-hmm. People who need to buy, you know, a loaf of bread and, you know, a half a gallon of milk and some cereal. Let's put the burden on them. Let's not put the burden on the rich guy with his, you know, eighth yacht.
Oh no, let's, and on top of that, let's get rid of, you know, the IRS, the only people with the technical expertise to go after millionaire and billionaire tax cheats. You know, the whole thing is just so obvious and would endanger an economic recovery. And oh, by the way, you might have missed this, but there is an economic recovery underway. It's obviously not everybody's where they want to be yet. Just go try to buy a dozen eggs. But compared to how we have emerged from the pandemic recession, the line is almost back to straight. It was, you know, making progress up. There was a big dip down, a big dip back. And now the economy from a GDP standpoint is pretty well back to where it was. And yet you don't seem to hear much from media about that.
Right. I mean, the jobless rate is a full 3 percentage points lower than it was under Trump. So a lot more people are back to work. But there's inflation because, you know, we put a bunch of money into the system to keep people afloat, you know, in the really bad days of the pandemic. And that, when you spend that much money in the economy, you're going to have inflation. And we did have inflation, but that all the trends are good there as far as that kind of coming down. The GDP number yesterday was very good. It was higher than the experts said it would be. And by the way, why do we always believe in the experts if we're always afterwards saying, well, this was not what the experts expected?
Right.
They must not be very good experts, I guess. No. But it's so, I mean, the economy has really stabilized in a kind of an amazing way, considering that we're recovering from an extreme shock to the system. I mean, people's memories are very short these days, but they need to remember what it was like, you know, in April of 2020.
And let's not forget as well the role that that the profit motive comes into play here. And again, nobody's against profit, but we're very much against, you know, monopolies and you know, market gouging, manipulation. And so when you talk about the experts, yeah, the experts tell us, I mentioned eggs a second ago, you know, avian flu, and there's no doubt that many chickens have had to be destroyed and such, but there's also something to be said about, you know, price gouging, and the profits of some of these companies are as high as they've ever been before. So when we talk about, you know, experts in all kinds of ways, we, you know, right, police investigations and everything else, it's not that we shouldn't believe them. We should, you know, we should take in everything, but we should take it in at face value, right, and say, okay, that might be the case, but you know, what else do we need to know? And we just haven't heard nearly enough about this recovery compared to, like you said, when people liked the bad news, when things were not, you know, doing well.
Well, like, I mean, how many headlines did you see when gas prices were shooting up? Mm-hmm. And then how many headlines did you see when gas prices were coming down? It was not comparable. It was not.
And if there were going to be any kind of press like that, you always have to look for the next distraction, because that's where it comes from. There's always something silly. And apparently this week, silly, and I swear, Mark, I have not read enough to speak about it intelligently, and I'm proud of it, is the M&Ms. Some kind of controversy about M&Ms, and I don't even know what, but it was this week's distraction.
Well, you want me to explain it? It's because, you know, it used to be that the cartoon M&Ms, and that was part of the commercials, and one of the cartoon M&Ms was a woman with, you know, long legs and high heels, you know, coming out of her M&M, and the M&M's people like altered that to put her in flats and make her, you know, less like, you know, a floozy, I suppose. and all right, so that's fine. I mean, that's probably a good move, actually. But that outraged the right. That was like, oh my gosh, you're messing with our culture. You're like, you're you know, and so any like minor thing like that is this assault on our culture, as if the culture is static for one thing, and as if things like that really matter. I mean, and so, you know, we're gonna boycott M&Ms. You know, well, you know, fine. I mean, my feeling about that is, if you don't want to eat candy-coated chocolates, don't eat them. We're not going to force you. There's going to be no law in Washington demanding that you have M&Ms, and we go door to door and we're going to shove M&Ms, you know, and we're going to run all these commercials. And anyway, so M&Ms had to back off on their commercials. Now they've shifted to an entire different thing, and they've put the cartoon characters on the shelf because they reacted to Tucker Carlson and other idiots. Well, not idiots, just liars.
You know, yeah.
Just calculated liars.
Well, as you noted, you know, in 1944, Americans stormed the beach at Omaha in the face of deadly gunfire. But in 2023, Americans feel threatened by the footwear of M&M cartoon characters. And I do think people of that generation would just look at us and say, this is what passes for political discourse.
And also this whole snowflakes thing that we've been hearing in recent years. Oh, liberal snowflakes. Well, who's the snowflakes if you're going to get offended by an M&M's commercial? I mean, really, who is too tender to survive in this world? So, I mean, there's this kind of right-wing kind of outrage machine that it's got to find outrage. And if there's not enough, if the jobless rate is extremely low, you can't be outraged about that. If they're starting to control inflation, you can't be outraged about that. So these M&Ms are they're a threat to everything. You know, and it's same thing with the drag show stuff. I mean, really, Pat, is that something that you think about a lot? Is that something that you worry about?
Nope.
I mean, do you worry more about whether you need to change your tires because they're getting worn out, or that the roads need to get fixed because there are potholes, or the economy or healthcare? Do you? I bet you worry about those more than you worry about whether somebody you've never met is having a drag show in some town you've never been to.
And honestly, again, on the list of things that I worry about more, and we see it in the headlines all the time, would be people in religious orders or other positions of power sexually abusing people.
Right.
That's where the sexual abuse and the grooming is coming from certain institutions that are being hypocritical, to put it charitably, about trans people and drag shows. We got a minute left. I don't mean to turn this into a game because politics is serious business, but I think we need to come up with the right way to phrase this. Which of these things happens first? There is some kind of an agreement on the debt ceiling. Kevin McCarthy is thrown out as speaker. George Santos, whatever his real name is booted from Congress. Do any of those things happen before the 4th of July?
That's a good question. I think, well, the debt ceiling thing, because the tricky thing about the debt ceiling is that if there's not like a hard deadline. I mean, there are various maneuvers the federal government can do to delay it. So that could push past that. Mm-hmm. I would say that the most likely thing is that Santos will get kicked out of Congress, but I don't think that's likely, because I think he's a perfect mascot for the Republican Party.
Oh, God, is he ever. Mark Jacob, thank you so much. It's good to talk to you again. Have a great weekend.
Sure. See you next week.
All right. We will talk to Dan Schumacher and look at the weekend of sports after this. You're up north. As always, when Dan Schumacher joins us, a little Grateful Dead, this time playing the role of weather forecasters, I guess, Dan.
It's snowing.
What's the name of the song?
Cold Rain and Snow.
All right. Well, there you go.
And I think we've had that around here for the last 2 weeks. Rain, snow, then rain, then snow.
Yes, and very, very, very little sunshine. Dan joins us again to talk about sports, either the stuff that's really happening or the stuff we just want to talk about. One of them was we missed Bob Uecker's birthday yesterday. 89 years old, still getting it done so easily, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a pleasure to listen to, anyway. You know.
Yeah, he is.
He's a pleasure to listen to.
He is, and I still love on YouTube. I will see occasionally his old clips sitting with Johnny Carson and the stories that he would tell back then. So it's a good, we hope he had a good birthday. But we also lost a sports broadcasting legend of sorts. And I will admit, I don't know much about Billy Packer because I don't watch that much college basketball, but I'll bet you do.
Yeah. He was a great basketball player himself in the ACC back in his day. I actually saw Jay Billis tweeting out that people didn't realize he's not even in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and he's been the voice of college basketball as long as Al McGuire was, as long as Dick Vitale has. Billy Packer's called probably more national championship games on that TV and radio, and what he's done for the game of basketball, I can't imagine why he shouldn't be going into the Hall of Fame, the Naismith Hall of Fame.
Oh, and I'm quite sure that'll be rectified now and will be, you know, a moment of great reminiscing. But yeah, could have been done while he was still with us. The Milwaukee Bucks are in Indiana tonight with Giannis back in the lineup after missing five games. The Badger men's basketball team has now fallen to 4-5 after losing five of their last six, and they will host Illinois on Saturday. And everything that I read about the game the other night used words like listless and tired and sluggish. And you, as somebody, when you know that this is not a bad team. And you've seen this before, that there are teams, they're not bad, but there is just something that's in a funk about them. And I can't imagine anything more frustrating for a coach, much less an athletic director, when the talent is there and you can't figure out what's not gelling right now. What do we got to do to get back on track?
I bet you Greg is it's driving him nuts that he can't find the right combination, the right lineup, the right rotation as far as mid-game. And he's got to know, I mean, every coach has to know what his players' limitations are, both from a skill standpoint and from a, you know, being in shape. I agree. I thought that they were a little winded a lot of times playing Northwestern the other day. I didn't think that they were lethargic, maybe is a word that you could use for that. But usually Coach Gard, from what I've seen over the years, and he's such a good coach and such a good guy. He'll figure it out and he'll get the best out of his guys and they'll rebound by the time. They just need to be playing real well going into that basketball tournament.
And I know this is terribly cliche, but I know people are going to say it, you know, if you're going to have a slump, you want to have it now, you know, and by the time you get to the tournament, everybody will have forgotten about it or say, wow, did they really figure out how to get it all together? And I know it's trite, but it, you know, there's cliches exist because there's something true about them at some point or another, you know?
That's right.
So this is when you want to have it. In terms of WIAC, I will admit I didn't do much for any scouting, so I have no notes to lead you in. But what kinds of things are happening around the conference in the winter sports, men's and women's basketball, hockey? What kind of storylines are you following as a WIAC athletic director?
Well, it's coming down to the crunch time now. I would say that we have three more weeks left of the regular season before we move into, late February, starting hockey tournament, the WIAC hockey tournament, the WIAC basketball tournament, wrestling, the whole nine yards is going on. And then come February 10th, baseball and softball and lacrosse across the league, they start preparing for the spring, you know? So the crossover will happen in a couple weeks, but it's going to get really busy on every campus across the state with basketball, wrestling, and whatnot. So it's a busy time.
And it's funny that, you know, Dan is in our neighborhood here and us neighbors get together every so often. And I know we're moving into that time of year where it's like an eclipse, a blackout period where we go, where's Dan? It's crossover. He'll emerge on the other side because you've got so many teams to visit, so many matches. And one of the ways you do it, and this was one of the topics I wanted to talk to you about today, deals with technology. And I have been, you know, with you while you are watching one sport live and you're watching another one on your phone. And again, as I've said, I have a son-in-law that works for a hockey team, you know, with a university in Michigan. And I probably follow that more, again, because you can get the NCHC as the conference. The conference has an app and you can watch that live stream on your TV or on your phone. It's not that you still don't go, you know, to all of these matches, but it really is something that we have the technology now that, I mean, let's face it, if you were an antisocial student up there in Towers, you could still be a Blue Gold fan, but you'd have to do it two-dimensionally, but the technology exists.
That's right. That's right. I mean, Wednesday night, we had home basketball. Men were at home. Women were on the road. And then we had home men's hockey, which we had a big win versus Stevens Point. I had the computer on watching women's basketball at lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And then I had my phone with watching hockey while I'm sitting at the scores table of the men's basketball game. So, yeah, keeping a beat on everything, it's just become second nature. You know, 20 years ago, we didn't have this capability.
No, we had to wait for the bus to come back, you know, to find out how a team did or somebody to pick up the phone. I worked at radio stations where you really hoped it would come over a teletype or whatever, but you were at the mercy and you did not get that. That's why people bought morning newspapers, because that's the only way that you were going to find out if somebody won or lost. And but it also means that there's more people involved. I mean, you've got the athletes, the coaches, equipment managers, trainers, and all that. And now it's, there's TV people, there's people that help run the streaming. It's become so much more media centric than ever before, which
I guess I'd argue is a good thing. We employ 30 students. We employ 30 students to run what we call our production company, our Blue Gold Sports Network. Mm-hmm. And those students help coordinate the graphics for the TV broadcast, the streaming. And then we have our own streaming lines so we don't have to worry about anything with any other outside carriers because we were able to develop our own app and do those things to control that stuff and make it more cost effective. So,
well, yeah, there's always cost. And I want to say in the 30 seconds we got left here, I saw a report. I don't know if it's confirmed that Bally Sports might be bankrupt or Sinclair might be approaching bankruptcy, which means all the regional sports networks are going to realign yet again as they find ways to try to get us to stream. But it's just a reminder that, you know, if you're a sports fan, you know, and you're not much of an athlete, between coaching, training, media, equipment, there's all sorts of ways to get involved. And a guy like Dan Schumacher would be a good person for you to reach out to and say, hey, Dan, how can I do this? How can I get a career in sports using these particular talents? Thank you. Enjoy all the games. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, Pat. Good talking to you.
All right. Monday, the premiere of Motherhood Mondays with Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin here on this fine program. Earl Ingram's next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller in Madison. Todd Alba all along the Civic Media Radio Network.